At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Japan Top 10. Hello, this is Andy.
And this is Ethel.
And you are listening to Japan Top 10. It is a cultures episode this week, and it's our 11th one, in fact. Our topic today is COVID-19 and its impact in Asia. But before we get into it, I have a few announcements. Let's start up at top. It is Listener Appreciation Month, and news of what's happening has probably gotten you feeling pretty down. And restrictions in your community probably have you surrounded with negativity. But we are happy to be letting everyone know that there will be more songs included on this episode and all other episodes released this month.
That's right. It's because you'll be getting our highest Patreon tier episode, known as our Premium Platinum tier. If you're hearing, more talking and more music in this episode than our regular episodes, it's because we're giving you premium platinum tiered episodes this entire month of April. If you enjoy all these benefits and really enjoy not hearing any announcements throughout this whole show, please join our Patreon program at jtop10.jp/club. We would also love to hear your song requests from you. For episodes released this month, check out our website for more details. We would also like to quickly remind all our listeners that if you love what we do, we are always looking for a lot of volunteers to join our podcast. To find out more information, just apply on our website at jtop10.jp.
Yes, that is right. You can join the awesome ranks along with Ethel and I and create some awesome content. Well, before we get into our topic today, I want to give a quick little disclaimer about the contents of our episode, as it's a cultures episode, but a little bit different as we're tackling kind of a current world event. So a lot of the information that Ethel and I have gathered, we've done so on our own time and through our own resources. So a lot of our information are, English language websites that have been broadcasting news across the world, as well as, our local internet resources that we've been gathering information from. So just saying that, our facts are coming from the internet, that we are kind of presenting this not as a hard, documentary style case about COVID-19, but including our personal opinions and our point of views about certain issues surrounding the coronavirus situation in the world.
That's right. So without further ado, let's just kickstart this episode. So by now, I'm very sure that most of us who are affected by the coronavirus pandemic are practically experts by now, from doing all the research necessary to find out what is coronavirus, how it spreads, what are the symptoms to look out for. So we won't get into that in this episode. But we will let you know that Andy and I are, in a way, currently experiencing lockdowns in our respective countries. I also would like to apologize to any of my listeners out there today on this episode that you might hear some bells tinkling and cats meowing, because I have a very needy cat that I've adopted and he won't leave me, so I do apologize. Anyway, laugh, Andy, laugh. Anyway, so till today, there's at least over 2 million coronavirus cases worldwide. There are over 127,000 deaths recorded, with nearly 500,000 infected who have recovered from the coronavirus themselves. In the US, it's not looking too good, is it, Andy? So if anyone doesn't know, Andy's actually from Wisconsin. So yeah, how is it, Andy?
Yes, I am. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you have seen the news already, or if you're living in the United States, just on a daily basis through the news as well, that the number of cases in the US has surpassed any other country in the world at a very rapid rate. And, you know, there's plenty of factors, of course, contributing to that. But I think, yeah, it is a really hard thing to be a United States citizen, but kind of watching from the outside looking in. And a lot of my family and friends are still over there, of course. So I spend a lot of my days worrying and checking in on them and kind of trying to keep ahead of the situation as best as I can and keep informed.
Yeah, I'm very sure you've been quite worried. And not only has it impacted the US quite badly, it's impacted like Europe as well. And most of Middle East aren't doing quite well. So, but for now in this episode, what Annie and I will be doing is that we'll be giving we will be sharing like our perspectives of how the coronavirus has impacted our countries that we live in, the cities that we live in. So Andy lives in, where again, Andy?
Yes, I live in Chiba in Japan. So just east of Tokyo.
Yeah, and I live in the capital city of Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur. So we'll be sharing some of the impacts it has had locally in our communities, as well as how it's changed working culture locally, how our governments have responded, how it's impacted our local medical industries, travel, hospitality. We'll cover quite a broad spectrum, I would say, in this episode. And we'll also be discussing what we've noticed in our local social media landscapes about how people have responded to the coronavirus, and especially during the lockdowns in our respective countries. Also, I would like to let people know that because it's a cultures episode, it's going to be more of like a talking style podcast show rather than the music heavy ones like all our other episodes in J-Top 10. As such, all of the songs that we found for today's episode, which is our listener appreciation episode, have quite literally come out in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And I'm honestly quite amazed by how much creativity has come out since this whole coronavirus pandemic has struck the world. So yeah, without further ado, here's the first song of our episode, PPAP 2020 Remix by Pico Taro. PPAP.
I have a handle. I have a soap. Wash, 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 wash. I have a soap. I have a handle. Wash, 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 wash,
that, of course, was PPAP, the 2020 remix by Pico Taro, the one and only. So I'm sure many of you remember 4 years ago when the song PPAP went viral. Well, Pico Taro returns in 2020 amid this coronavirus pandemic. And on the 5th of April, to remind us all to wash, wash, wash our hands. And his new PSA anthem really introduces us to an updated acronym for PPAP, which has changed from the original pen, pineapple, apple pen, to pray for people and peace. What, yeah, what a beautiful message, you know? I can't believe how something so initially annoying to me became a message of beauty and peace.
Was it annoying? I kind of found it quite funny when it first came out. I was just watching this middle-aged man in his leopard print outfit sing about pen, pineapple pen.
At the time, I was teaching English. That was before I changed jobs, and all the kids every day would come screaming up at me like PPAP, pineapple apple fan, you know. So it did get a little trying for me in that time.
That's quite funny. But yeah, I was genuinely so surprised by Pico Taro like coming out from his dormancy to sing about peace and praying for people. And but it's a good PSA nonetheless to remind people to wash their hands. And yeah, from here on, it's going to be all about you, Andy.
Yeah, so kind of leading into our next topic, if you will, I want to focus in on talking about how the coronavirus pandemic has impacted Japan, some of the major events, and give a little bit of my perspective. So again, like I mentioned up top, this is not going to be, you know, fully comprehensive report style, but and I do know that it is a bit of a sensitive topic to talk about as it is so entwined with, you know, tragedy, but we are going to try and keep it as conversational and observational as possible, bouncing back between Ethel and I talking about this. So let's get started. One of the most, you know, impactful and first major events that kind of marked the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic here in Japan was the international incident that was the Diamond Princess cruise ship, of course, docked in Yokohama. So as I'm sure most of you know, that was a cruise ship that came in from Hong Kong, I believe, was where it was coming from. Yeah. And then they had discovered that a few of the residents, not the residents, but a few of the passengers had contracted the coronavirus and were in need of medical assistance. So after the cruise ship docked in Yokohama, they were not allowed to enter into Japan. That was kind of, they were locked down in the ship. And of course, that led to a very bad situation for the people on board because it basically became a hotbed for the coronavirus to spread amongst the people on board. And with, you know, limited medical resources and kind of poor handling of having people coming in and out of the ship, it led to a lot of a wider spread of the virus than maybe would have happened had it been handled otherwise. So do you remember seeing things about this? Of course, I'm sure you did, reading the news and everything, right, Ethel?
I did check the news out. I actually didn't pay full attention to what happened on the Diamond Princess. All I did read about in passing was that the Diamond Princess as a cruise ship docked in Yokohama, and then it was during the coronavirus outbreak. So what happened was that I heard that only a few people on the Diamond Princess were actually infected, but then because they didn't want to let out people from the cruise ship, or there was just poor mismanagement, I think, by the Japanese government in response to how they would work with the situation, what happened was that the infection of coronavirus just spread throughout the entire ship. So everyone who was on it became infected. And then I'm not sure what happened after they let, I'm not even sure when they decided to let the passengers off the cruise ship. And then I'm not sure, I didn't follow up after that. So I'm not totally sure what happened after they were let out from the port itself.
Right. So essentially what had happened is that a lot of the countries around the world saw this situation happening, and then they started to fly out their citizens. So, for example, you know, Canadians flew back to Canada and were flown out by the Canadian government, and et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of these passengers ended up exiting the ship anyways and traveling through Japan to get to different airports and whatnot. So it created just a very big and messy situation that, of course, I'm no expert in this thing either. I don't have a bird's eye view to offer how it could have been handled better, but it was widely criticized, you know, around the world for being poorly handled and leading to a lot more infection.
So did Yokohama itself become like a cluster situation where the coronavirus was just there, like an epicenter, a particular epicenter of where the spread happened?
Yeah, so I think it became a little bit of a small cluster because also at that time, I don't know if it was, I think it was completely unrelated, but at that time also in Japan, there was a second cluster already forming in Yokohama due to another, a taxi driver who had contracted it from someone he was taking away from the airport. And then he went to an end of the year party, which are very common here in Japan, and unfortunately spread it amongst the party. So it became kind of another smaller cluster within Yokohama, independent of the situation with the Diamond Princess already happening.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. But then what happened to Hokkaido as well? I heard that there was a situation in Hokkaido where there was another set of cluster infections, but I wasn't too sure what it was about.
Yes. So that was Japan's actually big, I should say, first big cluster that developed out of the coronavirus, because someone who had visited the Hubei province in China came back into Hokkaido and was working at a school lunch center and unintentionally spread the virus while working at the school lunch center to a school in Sapporo, in the main city in Hokkaido.
Oh, I see. Was this before or after the announcement for postponing the Tokyo 2020 Olympics?
Yes. Yeah, so these events were actually all just before. So the postponement of the 2020 Olympics didn't happen until mid-March, which, you know, is relatively, it's already mid-April, I guess, but was relatively soon comparatively to these events. So a lot of people had actually thought that the Japanese government was underreporting due to trying to continue the Tokyo 2020 Olympics from happening this year. They wanted it to happen, and therefore there was under testing and whatnot. A lot of people criticizing this situation say.
So when you meant criticize, when you meant they, you mean like the Japanese local citizens themselves were criticizing the government?
Actually, I should say a lot of the criticism is coming from outside of Japan, actually. I haven't heard a lot of internal criticism other than some criticism lobbed at Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. A lot of people, within Japan have been very upset with how he's been handling things, especially concerning the closure of schools. I'm sure that you may have heard that that was happening as well. And it has happened, of course, you know, across the world now. But Japan's schools closed at the beginning of March, I believe, if not at the end of February. But it was done very quickly. And so a lot of families were not able to properly prepare for their children to be at home. So that was kind of the first big criticism that people had of how Shinzo Abe was handling this situation, and then that kind of snowballed into the worldwide media latching onto this idea about the Tokyo 2020 Olympics kind of being this goal that Shinzo Abe still had and wanted to make happen this year, regardless of the worldwide pandemic, you know?
Okay, interesting. It sounds there's a lot of like missteps in the situation of how it was handled. It was like mishandled at one point, and then it was a little bit late considering how much it had spread by then. In your opinion, was there quite a bit of like a sense of urgency that struck like the Japanese people themselves when they heard about the coronavirus clusters in Yokohama or Hokkaido?
It's very interesting you bring that up. I actually didn't really feel that there was an intense pressure. A lot of people trusted that the Japanese government, at least at the beginning, that they had it under control. And then, of course, you know, as the situation has developed and there's been more cases and more spreading, people have kind of changed their tune and come around and been more critical of the government and much more. They have latched on more to the idea that steps are becoming slower and slower and that we need to be taking more action sooner. So it's kind of an interesting change in the dialogue.
But did something trigger like publicly that led to more people be like sitting up and like, okay, this is a real problem. This is a real thing that's spreading. I think we should be doing something. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a huge turning point was the death of the very famous comedian, Shimura Ken. I don't know if that made, I know it kind of made actually waves over all the way into America. I saw that there was some reporting about it in, I can't remember which news source it was particularly, but it shocked me that his death even kind of made a big enough impact that people were talking about it outside of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who don't know, so Shimura Ken is often said to be, you know, Japan's Robin Williams, or to give kind of a caliber of how famous he was here in Japan and his impact on comedy here in Japan. And so his death really became kind of a sobering moment for the general public. I think people working in government and things like that were, you know, obviously dealing with the coronavirus situation, but the general public really didn't have anything to be wildly concerned about in terms of, oh, like, you know, it's just, that's happening somewhere else. That's not really my situation now. But after that news that his death came out, it really changed the tone of how people started to talk about the coronavirus.
Yeah. And to those who do not know, Shimura Ken was actually considered to be part of the high risk category because I believe he was 62 years old when he passed away. So that was,
was he
70? Oh my gosh. That's,
yeah.
Well, that is still considered pretty much the high risk category. And,
right.
If anyone out there knows, Japan's average population age is in their 70s, if I'm not mistaken, and it's a shrinking population. So to have the coronavirus impact Japan would be very devastating because so much of their population is in the high-risk category. So I don't know how the government is going to deal with this because so many people are going to be impacted. There are a lot of townships in Japan where it's just elderly people.
Yes, that is 100% correct. Even the where I'm living now in Chiba, it's a very, very much an older population. And there are a lot of concerns, of course, you know, with that if we are to get more and more cases here, that it will devastate our community. So, I know the Japanese public has now kind of started to come around, or at least I feel like they are, just judging on what I've been hearing in my office and whatnot. So I know that a lot of the world also dealt with shortages, kind of turning the conversation, if I may. Mm. A lot of the world dealt with shortages of toilet paper and other essential items. Was that a problem for you in Malaysia as well?
Not so much. In Malaysia, we didn't experience, there was panic buying, but there was panic buying for more like fresh food. So it was more food related, not toilet paper. The toilet paper thing is like, it didn't really impact us. People reasonably bought toilet paper because Malaysia's majority Muslim population in some of our homes in Malaysia, we have toilets with bidets, so we don't really need I think Japan also has it too, so you don't really need to have toilet paper that much. So it wasn't such a big deal. It's more concerning about fresh food. Food produce was more of the things that got panic bought here in Malaysia. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And it's funny you say that. Yes, there is a culture here as well of, you know, having bidets and having a bidet at home. But earlier on in the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of worries about production in China and things like that were becoming more known to the Japanese public. And so there was actually a time where people panic bought toilet paper here because they thought that if the coronavirus was affecting production at Chinese factories, that they weren't going to be able to buy it. And so we actually had a panic buying of toilet paper a little bit ahead of the panic buying that happened in America that became pretty famous on the internet.
But wait, when did the panic buying for toilet paper happen? Was it before the lockdown that Japan rolled out? Way before?
Yes, it was actually in late January. It was very, very early.
Well, if people could panic buy for toilet paper because of the coronavirus in January, why did it take them so long to decide? I think now is a good time to postpone the Tokyo Olympics. And I think now would be a good time to, I don't know, go into lockdown. Yeah, it's March.
Yeah. It's very strange, but it is kind of the trend that people are now realizing about Japan, that it's having a delayed reaction to all of these things, as you mentioned before as well, just a general delayed proactive, not even proactiveness, it's very reactive. There's not a lot of things being done to prevent. It's almost as if they see things becoming bad and then decide to act. And a lot of people will attribute this, you know, to how government works here and whatnot. But, you know, it's hard to know what exactly is the reason why Japanese government and general populace is so reluctant to take the lockdown seriously. You know, I'm sure you probably caught on, but I'm still actually going to work. My prefecture, Chiba, is in a state of emergency, but I still have to be going to work. And part of that is because I work in the government. I work as a city employee. But the other part of that is a lot of people aren't working from home yet in places that aren't Tokyo or Osaka or Kyoto. Like, the main cities have a very strict lockdown, or a more strict lockdown, with people being able to work from home. But it hasn't spread nationwide like it has in other countries.
Yeah. So, guys, when I found out that Andy was actually going to the office to work during a lockdown, I was like, what? So anyway, we'll probably talk into this a little bit more further in the episode. So go ahead,
Andy. Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. So I could ramble on and on. But let's break this very serious talk up with another song, our second song. It is Zombie Chang with their song, Please Stay Home.
Where's my toilet paper? 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 Please don't listen to me. Where's my toilet paper? Where's my toilet paper? Please don't listen to me. Where's my toilet paper? Where's my toilet paper? Where's my toilet paper? Please don't listen to me. Where's my toilet paper? Where's my toilet paper? Where's my toilet paper? Please don't listen to me. Where's my toilet paper? Where's my pasta? Pasta. 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 Where's my toilet paper? Where's my toilet paper? Where's my toilet paper? Pasta. 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 Please stay home.
So, Zombie Chang is an indie electropop musician who has released quite a lot of catchy tunes over the years. This very interesting song with the looping lyrics of Where's My Toilet Paper probably ties into Andy's comment about how the Japanese people started panic buying toilet paper at some point in time in January. And even though it's like a minute 24 second track, it's got very interesting visuals. The lyrics are really quite tongue-in-cheek, and it's a jab towards probably local and international news about the toilet paper hoarding from all the panic buyers. As you go into the supermarket, it's just like emptied out and no toilet paper anywhere on the shelves. What I really love about this particular song and the lyrics is that the visuals basically show like a panic buyer in a shop dropping down a hole onto a conveyor belt, and the conveyor belt just sends them straight back into their homes, like inside their homes. it's the funniest thing ever, and it's basically telling viewers that if you're not out here to get essential goods, please stay home, which is basically the title of the song anyway. And yeah, it's a perfect song.
Yeah, so. I loved it too. I really loved the visuals. Like you mentioned, that was just such poppy, bright visuals. So if you have the chance, please look this up on YouTube, because it kind of changes how you listen to the song, I feel like.
Yeah, because like when you listen to it, it's just like it's easily a kind of tune that can just fall into the background as you do work. But once you look at it, the visual and why it was created, the messaging that Zombie Chang had, she was like, everyone, please stay home, wash your hands, please stay home.
Absolutely. But that is enough about, you know, the Japan side of things. I would really like to kind of get your impact about how this has, your input about how this has impacted you in Malaysia.
So for everyone listening out there, I am currently in week 5 of our lockdown, partial lockdown in Malaysia. It's actually called like a movement restriction order. So if you don't have the need to go out to buy non-essential goods, so like only essential places like the groceries, the pharmacies, hospitals are open now. If you only need to go out for that, just go out for that. So basically what has happened is that we got the government issued announcements to make the partial lockdown on March 17th. So that was the first day it happened. So now it is, what day is it? Today is like, I think April 16th. So today is like 30 days. It's been a month, guys. I've been under like partial lockdown for a month. It's insane. I know.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. How long is it in Japan now? It's only been
a week. about a week since they declared a state of emergency, and even that didn't, you know, lock down anything. So
yeah. So, and as Annie has said at the top of this episode, this is like a current world issue. So every day, sometimes I just look at stats like once a day to just see how we're doing, because obviously for a lockdown like this to happen, the outcome of it is that we want to make sure that the cases in Malaysia plateau or at least decrease over time. It has been a bit fluctuating over time. For the longest time, Malaysia was actually the number one most infected country in Southeast Asia. But as of yesterday night, which is like April 15th, our neighbors in Southeast Asia, Philippines and Indonesia, have overtaken us, with Philippines now being the most infected country in Southeast Asia. The reason being is that it took them so long to actually start reporting about the cases and people coming forward to like go to hospitals to say that to get tested that they have coronavirus. So Malaysia, from a very, very early standpoint, they actually took a lot of initiatives to get people to come forward to do the test themselves. And they are very transparent. So they reported who has been infected, how many deaths have happened, and how many have recovered. So if anyone wants to know, we have about just a little bit over 5,000 cases infected. We've had about just under 90 deaths, and over 2,500 people have recovered so far. And the way that it spread in Malaysia was, so actually this was the second wave, of the coronavirus infection. So the coronavirus infection started all the way, I think, in December to January. So that was our first wave, and we only had a really limited amount of cases. But then what happened was that there was a religious congregation where a lot of people went to listen to a cleric. It's called a tabligh event. It's a Islamic event, but it's mainly like information. It's a clerical event, like going to Bible study or something like that. So a lot of people came to this event, and what happened was that someone had coronavirus there, and it spread through the entire community. So what has happened is that because of that massive cluster, it spread to so many areas in the city center. So that's why there are so many cases that just popped out. Like if you see the scale, like the scale of how it spread, it just spiked, like boom, went all the way. So it was insane, and that was the reason why the lockdown happened. The lockdown was originally launched in March for just 2 weeks because the government wanted to see, like, in every two-week batch, how was the situation being handled. So I'm in week five, and week five was only announced last Friday. Actually, none of us were surprised that the government announced it. So this is actually the second time they've announced the extension, basically.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm speaking from the perspective of someone who is both, you know, not a native citizen of this country, but also someone who is kind of watching the government not necessarily be as forward with information. Do you feel a sense of, like, safety around, like, knowing that Malaysia is generally being more transparent about the information?
Oh, obviously. I mean, whatever our government has been through, if in case anyone doesn't know, that our former government, Pakatan Harapan, I can't remember what it's called in English, got kind of ousted, I think, in January. So and this was, like, at the peak time when the coronavirus was just impacting our community. It was kind of crazy, genuinely so nuts. Political volatility and, like, public health situation happening at the same time was really, yeah, really maddening. So I feel very safe that the government has been very proactive trying to get everyone on board with this whole situation, like, keeping everyone up to date as possible on what they're trying to handle. And just so you know, that our country actually rolled out twice an economic stimulus package to everyone. So it's from, like, the below 40 group. So we call it the B40 group. Basically, these are the really low income end of the of our demographic, all the way up to farmers and fishermen, and to small and medium enterprises in Malaysia, and some corporates, and down to the individuals. Like, if you earn, like, a certain wage bracket in Malaysia, then you are given, like, a small amount of money from the government. So I was actually just given a little bit of money from the government because I was a certain age, I'm single and, like, not married, and, like, I'm in a household of a certain income. So the government is trying to take care of us. And just so you know, the total value of the economic stimulus package that was rolled out in Malaysia is approximately $59.6 billion. It's
oh my goodness. Yeah,
I know.
It is good to hear that you are being taken care of in those ways, you know, that other people in other countries aren't necessarily getting the same kind of support. So it is nice to hear. I have a quick question for you about maybe more the medical side of things, if you are able to speak about it. Like, has there been any, how has access to testing been and everything in Malaysia?
So the great thing about this is that I actually have friends who work in the medical field in Malaysia. So what has happened is that I think by the second week of the lockdown, what has happened is that a lot of hospitals, mostly private hospitals, have taken an initiative to become, like, they have erected a drive-through coronavirus testing station, something similar to South Korea, but a little bit more, not so en masse. So it's more stringent. Like, if you get tested, you drive through, get tested, you go home, and then you await the test results. So it's not going to be, like, an immediate thing that you're going to be, like, tested negative or positive on the spot. So it will take some time for them to get back to you, but they will call you up to let you know what's your status, actually. And also regarding, like, PPE, the personal protective equipment that all the doctors need. So there have actually been a lot of local initiatives by makers throughout Malaysia, especially in the urban cities, trying to get donations from the public to get a material such as, like, the plastic shields for people, goggles, A lot of initiatives have been coming up. I've actually donated to about one or two of them because I cannot make, unless it's just like regular surgical masks, like maybe I could probably do that, but that's like non-essential, not core PPE equipment. Like the real PPE equipment is like the face shields, the goggles, not just the surgical masks, and also the scrubs that they need. So it's been really nice to see how the community has banded together to try to protect our frontliners. Like the frontliners include the cash checkout at the grocery store, the police officers, the army people who have stepped in to relieve police officers because they're trying to, so there are actually like traffic stops at certain areas in Kuala Lumpur where like if you don't need to like travel interstate or travel too far from where you are staying, they will ask you like, where are you going? If you're going to like the vet, it's okay. Because I took my cat to the vet the other day and I was stopped. Or if you're doing like some essential work, like you work in like a hospital or some place that has gotten like certain permission from the government to continue operation, that's okay. So yeah.
Nice. No, that is good to hear. It's good to know that side of things is also, you know, being taken care of, the medical testing and whatnot to make sure that people are actually being helped if they need to be helped, or, you know, have that peace of mind to kind of quarantine and not worry about if I have the coronavirus or whatnot, you know. That is good to hear.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so with that, I'm going to move on from slightly sobering comments about what has happened in Malaysia to a little bit of a more hopeful tune. So up next is Radwimps with their song, Light the Light.
You might be scared, but that's your strength. You must be tired. Hold on a sec. You feel disgraced and full of shame. You're halfway there until the light. Lack of hope, no way to cope. Sorry to say, I believe in you. That loneliness is all you have. But you know what? It's not your fault.
Someday we will talk all night of all that we've been through. No more tears, no more sorrows, only your brightest smile. Someday we will laugh all night about our hardest times. Until then we'll hold our hands together soft and tight.
Tears you don't deserve. Will you show some smile? Oh, please, for me. Don't blame yourself. Don't hate yourself. You can be rude. You can be mean. I know you will be back in a while to where we used to hang out a lot. I like who you are. I like who you are. I like who you are. I like who you are.
Someday we will talk all night of all that we've been through. No more tears, no more sorrows, only your brightest smile. Someday
we'll be right back.
So that again was Light the Light by Radwimps. This song was actually released last month in March, and Radwimps originally wrote this song to comfort and give hope to the people in China who were experiencing anxiety, frustration, and fear during the national lockdown at the height of the coronavirus or COVID-19 contamination and lockdown. So there was plenty of negative coverage from international media, of course, who pushed the rhetoric that mainland Chinese people caused this pandemic. And there was continued fear-mongering and dissemination of wrong information that has negatively impacted the livelihoods of people of Asian backgrounds living in the US and Europe, which has ranged greatly from boycotting Asian restaurants to blatant physical assault, which is, of course, such a tragic thing to witness, you know, looking at those news stories. So, however, Noda writes that while in midst of all of this turmoil the world is experiencing, he hopes that listeners will be able to find solace in the music, just as he has done, to make sense of this current pandemic situation. I think that really comes through on this song. I feel very, you know, at ease as I can be listening to Light the Light. You know, I think it is mission accomplished with that one.
Yeah, and I've always loved the way Noda writes his music. It's always very thoughtful. He always thinks about the people who are going to tune in to listen to these songs, and he really believes that music's able to change and affect people's lives. So I think he probably feels in a way helpless, like how I don't have a medical background. I'm not like a news journalist or anything. I'm just a musician. How can I help the world? How can I give them something that they can latch on to and give them some hope in these very dark times?
No, absolutely. I think that comes through in this song, definitely, and his other music. And mm-hmm. I think that's why we are kind of lucky to see a lot of these songs, like you mentioned up top, getting made amidst these very trying times. I think artists have tried their best to offer what they can to, you know, their fans in such a troubling and scary time.
Totally agree. So anyway, Andy, like you were just talking about not too long ago, you are actually still going to work on public transport to your office. Why? How? I don't get it. Why? Why are they not telling you to work from home? Is it actually impossible for you to work from home?
Yeah, so I think one part of it, like I mentioned, since I do work for the city, a lot of my work is kind of tied in, you know, people's personal information and whatnot. So some of the work I can't bring home legally. There's just a bar there that stops me from being able to bring some of the work, and my coworkers, of course, too, that they are unable to do some of their work from home. But another part of it is that I am actually technically an essential worker, as much as I hate to say it at this time, just because my office is, you know, doing a lot of foreign language support for foreigners living here in Japan. And therefore, when new information about the coronavirus or about certain things that need to be done in order to protect, you know, local foreign workers and whatnot comes through our office, we have to make sure that that information gets to people. So that is one of the reasons why I will not be staying home from work, at least for the time being.
Has your institution not been able to look at possible situations where they could allow you to like remotely log into your office computer from home?
Yeah, so unfortunately, as with a lot of things here in Japan, or at least at the, you know, country level, like, or not country, but in the countryside, I should say, I don't know how things operate in the city, but in the countryside, our technology is usually about, you know, 10 years behind what the current global trend of technology is.
We still
use faxes and, you know, all of that good stuff that you hear about in relation to Japan.
Oh gosh, but how are you like personally, are you like taking any like precautions yourself as you go around?
Yes, of course. So I have been basically on, you know, lockdown in my free time as much as I can. If I'm not going to work, the only time that I leave the house is to get groceries. So I have been very strict in my personal adherence to locking myself down and trying not to, you know, see people or get out into the community or anything. But yeah. I don't want to dwell on the doom and gloom of my situation. I would rather talk about how you have been dealing with your lockdown situation.
Well, it's week 5 for me, right, guys? So you think I'd be losing it by now? Okay, maybe just a little bit. But like, I've been working from home. So the company I work for, a game development company. The announcement for the lockdown, we were sort of in our heads, like preparing, acknowledging that, okay, at any point in time, the government may issue announcements to do the lockdown. As we said that, literally the next day, the government said, okay, Wednesday, we're doing the lockdown. And everyone's like, oh, crap, we're not ready for this. So basically, kudos to my company's IT guy. He's like literally one man with two assistants. They set up like our everything so fast, like in the week. I mean, for my team, we work with a lot of developers, programmers basically. So they could just like go home and like start working remotely at this on the same day itself. But for like the teams with a lot of artists and a lot of artists and concept artists and 3D makers, whatever you can think of, riggers and animators, they were set up like either the next day or within the week itself. So he worked round the clock, man. He worked round the clock. He reformatted computers. And like, as you were saying, Andy, you work with a lot of like data, right? Like customer data, client data. So it is very sensitive. It's a very NDA specific kind of industry. So on our client facing side, they talked with some of the clients that they were at, and some of the clients were like, okay, you can work from home, but please try to maintain strict NDA measures, make sure that your staff don't leak like certain material, they don't misappropriate you. So there was quite a lot of like thinking of like, what do we do? How do we get our servers out? How do we give people like the actual hardware that they can take home? So our IT guy like wiped a lot of hardware, and then like there were so many things that he did. It was insane. It was literally insane. And I don't know whether he slept for like 2 weeks, man.
Oh no. Yeah, that is I hope he's getting some proper rest now. But that is amazing that you and your company were able to, you know, have such a quick turnaround with things. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. To be very frank, I think a lot of companies had to act very, very quickly within the week itself of the announcement. And I would say most people who work in like the digital industry are able to work from home, but I know that like for bankers, like the financial institutions, it might be quite difficult. Medical obviously cannot work from home because they are essential services. A lot of the B40 group in Malaysia, so the below the certain poverty line, a lot of them are like they own mom and pop shops, or they own like food stalls. They can't go out to work. So that was why the economic stimulus package handouts were given. But on my personal level, I've been cooped up at home. I only go out to get groceries. I literally only go out to get groceries and whatnot. I've been keeping myself quite busy. So like first 2 weeks of like the lockdown, I was just like on this like massive decluttering, clean my house mode, because I've been trying to declutter my house since 2018. So I live with my grandfather, and I live in a house where there's like junk. I would say junk, like antiquities since like 1980s, 1970s and 80s. There's so many things in our house. It's ridiculous. So I've been on a mass decluttering mode. So 2 weeks into the whole thing, I finally succeeded. So many things are outside my house now, all arranged neatly in like recyclables for plastic aluminium, whatever. And I've like cleaned the cars. I've washed so much laundry. It's stupid. And cleaned my shoes. I've done a lot of things to keep myself busy. And I feel like I'm quite a pro at this, at like keeping myself busy. I've like done workouts at home. There's like so much things I've done. So I have personally enjoyed being on lockdown and working from home, to be honest. Not everyone can say that. I know that a lot of people are bored to tears at home. So I'm probably maybe one of the lucky ones, especially if you live at home with family, it's a lot easier. So I'm a bit concerned for some of my programmers who live alone. They're like talking to the walls or something.
I mean, maybe don't be too discouraged. I've seen so much on social media, and social media being, you know, Instagram, Twitter, mostly for me, that those are my two main venues for getting my content, if you will, and YouTube, of course, too. But, you know, some of those people have gotten really creative with like challenges. And, you know, I think in America, a big thing, almost to the point of being a joke now, is like people making bread.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm on that bandwagon. I started my sourdough starter thing too.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But has there been any kind of challenges, or what has been trending over in Malaysia during this lockdown period?
Well, I do know that the 10 for 10 challenge has come to Malaysia as well. So like the 10 for 10 challenge is basically like a fitness challenge. So you take a single fitness exercise, you do it 10 times, and then you tag your friends to do it as well. So that's the 10 for 10 challenge. And then generally there's been a lot of the use of social media has been to try to support local businesses in Malaysia, whether it's like food businesses or like small enterprises, like small individual entrepreneurs. So there's been quite a lot of movement to try and get people to, we are still open for business. It's just that you can only buy food for takeaway only or for delivery. Please support us, because a business that is out of like the regular. Oh, I forgot to mention that like our government, like they've also issued like a curfew. So your businesses or whatever can only, and you can only drive out your cars from between the hours of 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. That's it.
Wow. Yeah, that does put a restriction on things.
Yeah, so it impacts a lot of businesses as well. So, and I don't know about you, but, you know, there's like whisperings around the world about a possible new global recession that's going to be coming. And I'm not going to be surprised, to be honest. But yeah, that's a lot of things to do with social media. I think social media, that's what I've seen, honestly, locally, and I'm pretty sure all around the world, is that everyone is now a TikTok star in the making.
Oh my gosh, yeah, everyone has gotten funnier, like you mentioned too. Everyone's getting either fit or developing new hobbies. I know here in Japan, something that's gotten really popular is the new Animal Crossing game. I am guilty as charged. I have been playing it like a madman. Yes, yeah. But that is all to say that things have really picked up and caught a lot of traction on our social media landscape, including our fourth song for this episode. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Gen Hoshino with Uchi de Odoro.
Tamani kasanari au you na okura tobi a tojileba asu ga umareru nara asobo issho ni uchi de odoro hitori odoro kawaranu kodo hazumasero yo ikite odoro bokura sorezore no basho de kasanari au yo uchi de uta o kanashimi no muko subete no uta de te o tsunago ikite mata o bokura sorezore no basho de kasanari aeso da
So this is Gen Hoshino's most recently released original song that he actually posted up on his official Instagram account, I Am Gen Hoshino. to uplift the spirits of people in Japan who are all stuck at home to stop the spread of the coronavirus throughout the nation. He posted the song sheet on his Twitter and requested his fans to add subtitles in other languages on his YouTube page. So it's become quite a trending topic now, with like maybe 40,000 hashtags on Instagram for the hashtag Uchide Odoro, showcasing a lot of instrumental, vocal and dance covers to his song. It's actually really funny. And there are also a lot of popular celebrities who have come on board to support his initiative, such as Nakashima Mika, Daichi Miura, Miriya Kato, Watanabe Naomi and Thelma Aoyama. They've all joined in on the fun. They've done covers. I particularly love Daichi Miura because he did like the most impressive dance cover for the song. And he's actually done like a simplified version of it to get people on board to like also do dance covers with him. So have you seen it trending?
Yeah, yes, I have. I was just going to quickly say, yeah, Daichi Miura is such a good dancer too. It's always fun to see him produce anything, so that is awesome. I'll have to seek his simple cover and maybe do my own cover in my own time this weekend. But one of the biggest people over this past weekend to co-opt this song by Gen Hoshino is actually the Prime Minister. So Shinzo Abe kind of jumped on the hashtag on Twitter, a version in Japanese of stay home, so that in Japanese, stay home. And yeah, he used the Uchide Odoro as the backtracking for his, you know, message to try and get people to stay in. And of course, you know, with anything that any figure in the media at large does, it came with mixed, you know, reviews from critics, but also a lot of support from other people wanting people to take the message seriously of stay home. So yeah, that was an interesting development to come out of Gen Hoshino's little newest and little song.
Yeah, if you want, you can actually find the lyrics to the song. I think it's up on Instagram. It's really, really cute. It's just like, just stay at home and dance. Just stay at home and dance. It's really, really adorable to sing too.
Yes, it is so cute. And it's such a nice, it's a nice change. I feel like he was getting a little heavy with his music after Pop Virus and everything. I love this nice light little jingle.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was getting very melodramatic again, yeah, Hoshino. Yeah, I'm just very, like So anyway, as we are going towards the end of this episode, what are your thoughts, Andy, about the post-coronavirus era from here on out?
Yeah, I know that is such a huge topic to even try and breach, but I know to simply say something, you know, of course, nothing we do is going to really be the same after this. I think we're going to really reconsider, you know, how we move and how we travel and how people can actually work from home. You know, there's not necessarily a need to have as many people commuting to the office every day. And so, you know, maybe in one positive light, that will kind of affect the the environment positively, that we can reduce, you know, people always traveling and counting on, you know, tons and tons of cars out on the road and whatnot. You know, I hate to bring it to such a, you know, such a simple and whatever conclusion, but I think that's one thing that I've been thinking about a lot, how much this has impacted travel both locally and internationally. Was there anything that you have kind of been thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I was speaking to some of my colleagues and some of my friends, like the biggest winner of this whole entire pandemic is definitely Mother Nature. I mean, honestly, the atmosphere levels for some gases like carbon dioxide and nitrogen has dropped dramatically in the last few weeks because a lot of manufacturers around the world have stopped manufacturing. Basically, there's such a huge drop in public in personal transportation. So Malaysia is a very car-heavy country. So can you imagine all the drop in like nitrogen, all the carbon emissions just like tanked, like just dropped completely. And like, I'm a bit worried about travel. I do love traveling, and I do have a couple of friends who work in the airlines industry, so they're grounded for now. So it's very concerning. I know that I read the news somewhere that it's going to be like a 1.97 billion loss for the travel industry. So it's interesting. But I think what's really cool is that, like, on a personal level, my shopping habits have changed. I've now, like, bought so many things online for, like, personal use, like cooking stuff. And, like, I just recently bought, like, fabric to sew. It was the most bizarre transaction I've ever made. I bought, like, cat litter off the internet. And I'm like, oh, the internet, you can get so many things delivered. I actually don't maybe have to go to a shop anymore. But it's been a interesting adaptive period, I must say. But I am looking forward to the day that in a way that this is going to be the new normal, but I would like to go hiking, I guess. I would like to go to a cafe to sit down with my friends to catch up. I'm another thing I'm really concerned about. It's a very personal thing maybe, but I'm a big lover of music. So I love going to concerts, gigs, festivals, you name it. So I'm so concerned for all the organizers around the world who are like having to cancel in-person shows. So I've been really thriving off like all these like bedroom concerts or like online festivals that are happening on the internet. It's been the most interesting time, I would say. Is there anything you're looking forward to, any
in a post-coronavirus era? I think, yeah, the biggest thing I'm looking forward to is probably a lot of what you mentioned. You know, I will be happy to see my friends again. You know, I haven't been able to meet with any of my friends. And although, you know, you can talk online and whatnot, it's not always the same. But that's a very simple thing. But I hope that a quick serious note, I hope that people will take what leaders say seriously and what, you know, the scientific community has to say seriously after all of this, too. I hope that people are kind of seeing that there's a direct relationship between, you know, certain actions and certain outcomes, right? So I'm kind of looking forward to hopefully maybe all of us getting a little bit better about, you know, respecting each other and whatnot.
Yeah, and to be very kind to each other. I think reach out to those of your friends you know who are naturally very anxious and who need routines in their lives. Being at home may sometimes not be a great way for people's mental health. So yeah, don't be afraid to reach out to friends you haven't talked to in a long time and ask them, like, how are they? Because I think it's really cool. It's been a very nice time to, like, catch up with a lot of people with no excuses that you have no time.
No, exactly. That is a really good point. Yeah, I think it is a really good time to check in just, yeah, on those relationships that you might not have necessarily been able to keep up with from your day-to-day before. But yeah, and on a much lighter note, so thank you for letting me kind of deviate again. But yeah, I too am like really looking forward. I haven't gotten to go to a proper concert in Japan yet, even though I've lived here for nearly 5 years now. I am getting anxious to go to a concert, and you know, I love seeing that there's a boom in these online concerts and whatnot, but it will not change how I feel about going to an in-live, in-person concert.
Well, we're quite lucky that way, because I'm pretty sure something has happened quite recently, right?
Yeah. Do you want to inform maybe those of us who might not have heard this very exciting news?
Well, just in case everyone has forgotten, the most important thing you should be doing is washing your hands, right? So Arashi has recently released this very cute jingle. It's a very, very catchy song called Te Arai Douga. So go ahead, have a listen.
Arashi desu! Yahoo! Te arai dance tsukutta kara minna mo yatte ne! Itte miyou!
Hajimemashite! よろしくして、よく回して、お祈りして、おまじないで握りしめて。Let's wash your hands,
ダンス覚えたかな。それでは今から私たちが実際に手洗いを実践してみたいと思います。
So that again was 手洗い動画 by 嵐 or wash your hands. Yeah, as Ethel mentioned up top, it is such a catchy tune. Like this catchy PSA was released during the most recent live stream of Johnny's World Happy Live With You concert series, which just recently debuted on YouTube, and it was held between the 29th of March and the 1st of April. So this concert is, of course, as I mentioned, a series which was recorded in an empty stadium and was an attempt to bring the show to fans around the world who obviously can't come out to concerts anymore in order to cheer them up during these very uncertain times. This song also comes with a very detailed hand-washing dance to encourage strong hygiene habits among fans and hopefully among non-fans too. I want to like spread this dance to some of my coworkers so that they can get with the program and get this really deep clean on their hands. But who knew it would take a pandemic for Johnny and Associates to finally realize their potential and release music and, you know, concerts on YouTube and other forms of social media.
Yeah, that was the most bizarre thing. When I was watching this whole thing, I was just like, wow, you're like 10 years a bit too late, but welcome to the internet, guys. Welcome, welcome.
Yes, I personally will never deny Johnny's and Associates content to come directly to me in my living room, you know? I've waited for that for so long in my life.
Yeah, it was so bizarre, but I'm so thankful that, and I'm actually genuinely not surprised that Arashi came up with something like this. But the weirdest thing is that, guys, if you go on YouTube to watch this series, it's so bizarre because they are literally performing to themselves and basically to the other bands from like Johnny and the Associates. So the other groups that were featured on the entire concert series was like Heisei Jump, Sexy Zone, Kanjani 8, even Yamapi came back for like a nice special solo thing, and Kiss My Foot too. There were so many of the guys, it looked like they were just having such a good time. It was basically Shonen Club, guys. It was Shonen Club all over again. My childhood. So happy. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And I'm blessed for the first time seeing this renewal of Shonen Club.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, okay, guys. It's been a very interesting episode. This is the last episode. This is not the last episode. So the next episode will be the last in our Listener Appreciation Month. And we will be releasing another bonus regular top 10 episode that is normally reserved only for our premium, platinum, and star level Patreon donors. But because this is a listener appreciation month, these specials are all released just for everyone to hear. And Eric will be seeing you guys in a week from now, right, Andy?
Yes, that is exciting. I hope he has as much fun. Well, yeah, I had fun talking. It was a lot of, heavy topics, but yeah. I think I really was glad to be able to talk about them with you, Ethel. So Enjoy Eric next week.
I totally agree. So thank you guys. And we're so sorry if like Eddie and I got you a little bit down with our conversation. It was not meant to be that way, but this is our once in a while time that I get to catch up with Andy and vice versa. So it's so nice for me to touch base with him. And I hope that you guys enjoyed this very, very real conversation between the both of us about how the coronavirus pandemic has impacted us and what we think is going to happen after that. And we hope that you're all safe and healthy at home. And yes, as all our songs say, please stay home, wash your hands.
Yes, no, I will echo that just to underline the importance. I'm very happy to touch base with Ethel, but please everyone wash your hands, stay at home and be healthy and safe as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. And this is Ethel signing out. Bye.
And this is Andy. 자네.
자네.